Matters podcast. This is Sabrina Monarch, and this is a show about spiritual lifestyle and personal evolution. I'm an evolutionary astrologer, a clairvoyant, and a thought leader, and I started this podcast to have eclectic and impactful conversations about astrology, as well as all things spiritual and personal development. Welcome, everyone who's here presently, and those of you catching this recording. Pluto, symbols of power. This is a body of work that found me in the most Plutonic way, which I'll share about at some point in this presentation. And, you know, I've always had this relationship with Pluto in some sense. I think it really first began in terms of being obsessed with butterflies when I was a kid. And by obsessed, I mean like really obsessed, really in love, so intensely into butterflies, catching them outside my house every day, which eventually led to this first religious experience of mine at 9 years old when the entire monarch migration came flying down my street. They were an hour away by their normal migration site, and it only happened that year. So these kind of magical experiences or connections to nature is one place that I start to think about Pluto, but I also think about obsession, right? Or being haunted, having emotional, mental, energetic fixations or addictions. And so a lot of my work with Pluto over the last some years has been really a medicine path in my own life of aligning my life force and also supporting my clients and students and recognizing their patterns or where their energy is going and developing the capacity to invest energy on purpose and to divest energy from the places that are disempowering. So that being said, if you I have Pluto aspecting most of the things in my chart, and I'm very focused. I would say I'm intense. I would say that I get obsessive, but more and more in my life, I've discovered how to harness the energy of my focused, intense, obsessive energy and feel the deliciousness of it, the lavishness of it, the gift, the inheritance of it, as opposed to being in my swamplands, ruminating in resentment, like in the emotional addictions and whatnot. And I've had to work through a lot over and over again. And Pluto and astrology consistently guides me to do that. So I wanted to, for this talk, take a deeper dive into what Pluto is and how Pluto shows up in our day-to-day life experience. Because in some sense, Pluto is known as a transpersonal planet. It is mysterious. You can't see it in the sky with the naked eye. You have to use a telescope. You can see Saturn at times as like a star in the sky. But past Saturn, we can't really see these planets with the naked eye. And that's symbolic of them being beyond our normal register of consciousness. And having a Plutonic consciousness means that you tend to see between the lines. You tend to be able to read what's underneath. You tend to have access to your unconscious and your subconscious. And those are mysterious waters, sometimes waters that you can't actually see the bottom of. Those are places that really challenge and test us and are infinitely mysterious, right? It's kind of good that they remain mysterious because it's actually our cutting edge. Pluto relates to evolution. So the things in life that you've already kind of got the hang of that aren't that sensational to you, that aren't that much of an edge for you, are integrated. They're just part of you. The things at the edge, the things that get you sensational, that get you excited, that get you nervous, that feel impossible, that feel like you're in waters that you can't see the bottom of, that's Pluto. And so obviously there's fear that comes into that place. There's anxiety that comes into that place. And there's also a profound regenerative, life-giving, life-creating part of this archetype. And none of us are immune from Pluto experiences. None of us are immune from having an unconscious. None of us are immune from having a desire nature. So it's an archetype that has a certain place in our lives. And that's what I want to be talking about today. So just to answer the question, who is Pluto? Maybe you already know some of the things I'm going to be sharing, but I just want to give us a baseline to work with. For one, we could be talking about the myth of Hades. We could be talking about the Greek or the Roman Pluto, this god of the underworld whose name means riches. And this is a photo here of the abduction of Persephone. So we have a version of Pluto that is a force of abduction, right? Taking us under. So this is an experience that you might meet when you have those, you know, dark nights of the soul, or you feel like you're taken down and in. Sometimes we go to the underworld by choice, right? You could be doing a hypnosis session. You could be, you know, excavating something, like really on purpose going to Pluto's space. And then sometimes it just happens because you're struck with emotion or a sensation that's so deep that it kind of racks you to the core, right? Or an experience in life that confronts you in some really deep way. And of course, maybe the first few times of this particular rodeo, it's like this terrible thing that's happening. But when you get the hang of it, you know, there's this image of a crocodile in a swamp, and there's butterflies like all over its head, and the crocodile almost has this smile on. And I feel like that's the energy when you finally get the hang of Pluto. It's like you can see your swamp, you can see your limitations, you can see where you're at, and you can also see this possibility of transformation. Then there's also Kali, right? This destroyer goddess, this part of nature that is really vicious or lethal, right? Like this part of nature that can slice through, can end things. So also archetypally, this part of us who ends, destroys, recycles. Most of the time when I think about Pluto, I'm actually thinking about nature. And nature is an interesting word because sometimes we talk about nature as though it's like, you know, I went out in nature today. I mean the nature that you cannot escape from, the nature that lives inside of us, right? And the relationship, I think about this metaphor a lot. Like I live in an apartment building right now that for whatever reason, like bugs never get in my apartment. It's like extremely rare. I've lived in spaces where I saw spiders every day, and that's a much different, you know, experience. So while my current apartment houses me from the elements to an extent, you can think about your personality or your ego structure or your life, right? And how much of a buffer that is from nature, like raw, chaotic, primordial nature. And part of what we're really doing with evolutionary astrology and with Pluto work is having a more fruitful renegotiation between our personality and our human with our soul. Because that nature that lives inside of us is our vitality, right? There's something ecstatic. There's something enlivening about being in connection to it. And it's also very stressful to be at odds with that particular force, right? So these are our deepest drives. This is the part of us that is a total animal. And of course, being a social creature, a citizen creature, we have different ways, you know, a family creature, a person creature, we negotiate this kind of deeper drive all the time. And I think there's something about working with Pluto of how can you let your nature and your soul shine through your embodiment and shine through your life? And what does it mean to also not tame yourself in some of the ways that you don't need to be tamed? right? Like, it's a lot to confront our nature. And I'll keep speaking to this in different ways. One of them, this is inspired by one of my professors from my grad school program. I went to CIIS and got a master's in philosophy, cosmology, and consciousness. One of my professors there, Brian Swim, really, really inspired me in multiple ways. But his theories, the way he talks about things, he would talk about the universe story. And he'd put everything in this context of the 13.7 billion year old universe story. So we have this like beyond powerful moment of the birth of the universe, this explosion that the galaxies are still actually moving in space from that explosion. So if you think about that, like different explosions on Earth or something like that, where they last a certain amount of time, this is a universe explosion that has been lasting 13.7 billion years. And it started to turn into the development of galaxies and the development of planets with, you know, on Earth per se, like our atmosphere, and then single-celled organisms, and then more complex organisms. And there was this whole evolutionary process where we developed survival and procreation. And in a lot of ways, we still have that template. A lot of our biology experience is very ancient. The fact that we have eyeballs right now, it's like the eyeball was an invention of Earth or an invention of the universe, and our body stores that and remembers it. So yes, it's our eyes that we're looking through, but these eyes have ancient codes behind them. So in a similar way, when you are turned on, when you just really desire someone, you're part of a 13.7 billion year process inside of that. And I think that that, you know, I hope that gives us some empathy for how intense it is to be alive sometimes, right? Like there's so many movies about love and falling in love and heartbreak and all of that. And yes, that is a personal story, but it's deep. It's coming from this entire evolutionary process, and we're just at the tip of the wave of it. I could stay in this one forever, by the way. We could just sit here and just meditate on that, but I'll leave it behind. Pluto is also about what is underneath the surface. Right. So a volcano is a good metaphoric image for this. It's that energetic undercurrent. It's what's at the root, right? Or it's like that phrase, like the tip of the iceberg, right? Where there's like the part you can see at the conscious level and how much is actually underneath it. So if we think about, you know, and we're going to be talking about this more and more throughout this, of your, how much of your experience is matching your conscious mind, your conscious consciousness, and how much of your experience is matching your unconscious embodiment, your unconscious thoughts, and so on. And so when people are really wanting to deeply change their lives or change something, you go to the root, because that's where things are being created. You know, it's like if you were, well, we wouldn't want to cut down a tree for any reason, but it's like you can trim the leaves. That's not going to remove the tree. If you wanted to remove the tree, you'd have to go from the root, right? So it's that kind of thing in terms of our energetic patterns. I've also learned, you know, there's certain patterns within myself that I've cut at the root. There's other patterns within myself at the root that I've just had to learn how to love and actually be in better relationship with. Pluto is also a force of transformation, right? So either way, here we could be looking at the butterfly life cycle. Of course, I love the metaphor of the butterfly going from this caterpillar that is hungry and just like voraciously eating things. You know, it's like our experience of when we're in a little bit of a consumptive energy because we're hungry for life, like we're developing, we need experiences, we need to eat. And then we go into the cocoon and kind of digest it. There's this like melting of the butterfly's DNA, and it becomes an entirely new creature by the time it emerges from the cocoon. So psychologically, personally, it's like we have, if you're a plutonic person, you probably have those different cycles where you are building, building, eating, eating, creating, going into rest, integrating, emerging, and blossoming, and then doing it all over again. But there's also a transformation that we can think of in terms of death into life and life into death, and this circle of life and death that we're a part of. We're a part of it in the most obvious way, in terms of the mortality of our being. But we're also a part of it in terms of more subtle ways, different types of ego deaths, different ways that our energy recycles. And of course, this is one of the most challenging parts of the human experience to even, you know, people contemplating their mortality is like a really, it's deep, it's intense, right? And there's a way that sometimes we, you know, there's a desire to not go through the gate. And this happens too in terms of when we're holding on to something that we can't let go of that would serve us to let go of. That's also part of those life death mysteries, right? When you have energy in your system that needs to transform or shift in some way, right? Versus when you need to have more life and be like the caterpillar and whatnot. So this comes to a question of wisdom, right? Because how you navigate transformation or life death mysteries in your daily life is probably a really profound place. I know it brings me to my knees. I know it like brings me to a deep humility, and also has been the places I've thought or wrestled the most in terms of what's been hardest to let go. And Pluto also relates to sex and merging. So this is part of the reality that we exist as incarnate creatures, and the portal of our existence was sexual in some way, that there was the merging of two people. And if you think about that in a fractal kind of symbolic way, of that being the portal for a soul to come to a body, whatever point you think the soul and the body come together, the soul is always doing this. It's very mergy. It likes to form really deep bonds. One of the deepest bonds, of course, is the fact that we have this soul. We have like a deeper, you know, the way I work with soul and evolutionary astrology is that there's a reincarnation, that we have a type of history, that we have a distinct soul that has encountered different lifetimes to pursue a deeper arc of learning. So the soul does this in this life too, where we have this deep relationship with our personality. And, you know, our personality, our human selves are really imperfect and flawed and magical and beautiful in these different ways. Like there's a certain working with what we have that I think comes up with Pluto, where it's like everyone kind of has that inheritance of that thing that's like kind of special and magical and powerful about them. And everyone also has those kind of tragic flaws or those things that really sting a little bit. And Pluto medicine to me is the relationship with both of those things, to so love and luxuriate in what I have, right? And also to let myself be moved by the medicine of the humility of what is really hard for me in this life. But also this keeps happening, this merging story, because the soul likes to bond with other people. It likes to bond with teachings and books. It likes to bond with the land. It likes to bond with emotional patterns and addictions. It's very easily entangled with things. So when I talk about power in a Pluto context, I'm talking about the ability to have more agency with how you form bonds and relationships, and also the quality of the relationships. There's something within the Pluto experience about Pluto wisdom and like the Pluto arc of like being in like a really beautiful regenerative relationship with this planet is about creating mutually enhancing relationships, as opposed to lose-lose or win-lose relationships, relationships where there's some kind of power over, relationships where there's extraction. This is getting really right in Pluto with our desire, the tenderness of what we want, and being able to let ourselves have it in a way that is mutually enhancing, as opposed to feeling like we have to take it, like we have to sneak it, like we have to go through these like manipulative ways to get it, where we get really desperate and grabby and manipulative, essentially. So it comes back down to relationships, the profound vulnerability that we are these incarnate creatures that do not survive on their own, that we constantly have to merge with energy like food, shelter, other people, et cetera, to even live. So extremely tender, vulnerable realities of life, right? And the wisdom practice of how can this become ever more authentic, caring, connected, dropped in, true. Pluto is also about attraction and repulsion. So our deepest desires are on the line with Pluto. It informs what attracts us and repels us, as well as how we also become attractive and repulsive. You know, the energy where you kind of are like easily magnetizing what you want and it feels amazing, versus the energy where the way you want something is so intense that it seems to push it away. That's one form of it. But it's also like what we're attracted to and what repels us. And repulsions can be really informative because there's charge to it, you know? And if you are doing deeper kind of alchemy work with yourself, if there's a reoccurring situation in your life that keeps having a charge or keeps triggering you, there is some kind of energetic bond in most cases there. And things that don't bother you, right, that are just like whatever to you, might be someone else's profound, like, reoccurring issue. And so being able to neutralize the things that have charge for us is one way of cutting cords and cutting attachments. But it's not so simple too. Sometimes repulsions are like we're experiencing resistance about something that is really for us or is really connected to us. So these are some intricate pathways to explore. So we've already been talking about this, but just to kind of reiterate, power, you know, is another word like nature that can mean so many different things. We can define this in a lot of ways, but in a way that I want to examine with you today is your laser-like agency to match your core life force with your actual intention. Because with Pluto, our life force is often entangled in various dramas, bonds, emotional, experiential, chemical, mental addictions, and compulsions, right? Those are the places we tend to feel disempowered. And if you think about it, like how easy do you think it is to get right with the nature inside, that rippling force of the 13.7 billion year universe process inside? Personally, like I don't think it's easy. I think it becomes easier the more that we understand how it works, the more we have wisdom about it, the more we're willing to lean in. But it is evolution. It's adapting. It's our way of adapting to what the weather pattern of nature is that lives inside of us. And whether that totally blows us out, fucks us up, we're like totally messed up by it, or whether we're seated in it, in this way that we're just like riding the current of it and we're moving with it. To me, that's how I would talk about power especially today with Pluto. So I want to take a moment here, now that I've defined some of the ways Pluto is, to just offer a quick little meditation or drop-in experience. And there's a few things I want to preface that with. One is that I'm going to use the word peak experience. And peak experiences are often, I think we think of them as really amazing times, times of ecstasy, times that you were just in like the summertime or springtime of your life. Big, wonderful experiences. Peak experiences can also be negative. They can be traumas. They can be conflicts that were really intense for you. It's kind of like the high and the low. So the high peak experience is what we tend to think of peak experiences as. And the low peak experiences are like when you've had nightmarish experiences in your waking life. Now, for the sake of this meditation, feel free to go as deep in either of those directions as feels appropriate and helpful for you. You can have choice and boundaries about where you want to go and what you want to process. But the invitation is to think about where your energy is still lodged in those moments of time that you covet or that you feel were really difficult for you, and feel into how you can allow that energy to recycle and come back to your core energetic magnet. So I just want to offer this. We'll go into it just so you can get a feeling in your own kind of body or consciousness around it. And also, I want to invite you to release expectation around what your meditation experience needs to be like. I know some people just like love to go into trance and like love meditation, and some people feel like a more difficult time accessing it. So if you feel difficulty accessing it, I invite you to just like always with this, just be present with the layer that you meet and see if you can drop into deeper acceptance. And see if that lets you just like be there, or if it opens into another corridor and opens into something deeper. But either way, invitation just to be with where you are. So if you want to do this meditation together, I invite you to close your eyes. And just begin to connect with your breath. And just noticing where your energy is. If you feel sensation physically, if you feel like your energy is a little bit out there, I invite you just to call it back in and down. And while you're here, you can begin to visualize an aura surrounding you, a protective aura of some kind of color that resonates with you, to give you some space for this meditation that's yours. I'm just taking a few breaths into your root. noticing the seat that's holding you. The earth below you. And letting yourself really be held. And ask yourself, your deeper self, your soul, your higher self, to let you feel, sense, see your core soul magnet, this deep essence that you are. And take a moment here to allow it to be resourced by this field, this aura that you created, as well as the earth below you. And leaving this magnet to just be here, allow your attention to also find places where you've sent parts of your magnet in time, to experiences that you have attachment to. And while holding both of those, maybe you're getting visions about what those things are. Connect with the integrity of your soul magnet. And invite yourself back home. I call my power back. I call my energy back. Some of those things may come back really easily. Some of them may need support. So you might also visualize the cosmic forces or the earthly forces that recycle and transform energy. So that the raw energy that has gone into these experiences can go through the alchemical process of becoming raw again, pure energy, and return. And let yourself feel how much of yourself you want to come back to today, knowing that you can keep doing this and that we continually get invited to come back home to ourselves. That sometimes even just a little bit is a lot. Maybe if you feel it, offering a prayer here, maybe of gratitude to yourself, to the nature that's holding you, to the aliveness, to regeneration. You can gently allow this vision or this experience to dissipate and integrate to come back to this call. If anyone wants to share anything in the chat, feel free. Pluto is intense, but I think there's something also so deeply gentle about it. We have, that was a soul retrieval, felt like a deep burning, so good, the image of the magnet inside. That was powerful. Your guided meditations always take me into an amazing experience. Yay. Going into a trance is one of my favorite things. There are parts that didn't want to go. So the piece about alchemizing, recycling, and returning to pure form was perfect and needed. I've spent the last week in the ocean every day. Wow, feeling the waves at different speeds. I can feel the waves inside my body. This meditation is working with that. It's been easier than expected, powerful, and grounding. I really love all of these. So feel free to just let that energy be here with you. And we'll get back to the talk. Now I feel really bassy and relaxed. But what is relating to your deepest desires tended to feel like for you? And what is your experience with holding your own power? Something that I love about these questions is that they're energetic. You can relate to them at a really energetic level in a universal way. And then astrologically, there's also a signature. There's these patterns around how our personality tends to deal with our desire. And so in my daily life, or once in a while when things get more to a peak intensity, there's a certain imprint of how my personality relates to my desire nature that I get to recognize in real time, be like, oh, I'm in it again. And I think also with these questions, to me, this feels like the core of like what Pluto is about. Right? It's extraordinarily vulnerable, actually. You know, it's what's at the edge for everyone. There's certain things that are already easy for us and like already integrated. And so they're just not an edge, but you know, the things that are at the edge for you and that really like turn up the heat on your personal growth, right? Or your spiritual growth. So what is evolutionary astrology? This is a modern branch of astrology that was channeled by Geoffrey Wolf Green. He was astrologically aware, you know, following Dane Rudjar and other astrologers before him. This is the lineage that I practice. I have studied a lot of other things, other modalities, and other forms of astrology, but I root really primarily in evolutionary astrology. It just has a home frequency for me. And just to honor my lineage, my first teacher, my first astrology teacher is Ari Moshe Wolf. And he's an evolutionary astrologer. Evolutionary astrology resources Pluto and the nodes of the moon as a bottom line starting point for the soul's deepest desire nature and the strategies that the soul has taken on in this life and historically in prior lives to meet those desires. It's kind of a juicy story that comes out of this way of interpreting the chart, because it really shows the gravitational history, like what has been the strategy over and over again, and that's yielded some gifts, some talents, as well as some personality complexes and unconscious patterns and unconscious samskaras. But it also shows kind of where the energy is moving in the chart for the strategies or the types of ways of being that are going to be in most service in this lifetime. So really profound mapping. And this is more of a profound route of discovery, more profound than just the things that we want. It's understanding the deepest energetic patterns around how we relate to the experiences we want the most. So, I mean, there's a whole process of coming into deeper acceptance and love for like what we really want, like what really turns us on the most in life and all the ways. And it's extremely vulnerable to be with that. This is where people can get a little bit collapsed or shut down or complexed. This is where things get weird or desperate or grabby or shady, manipulative, addicted, right? Versus where we get in touch with our natural magnetism, laser-like free will and clarity, deepest humility and alignment with our own nature, deepest connection to our soft animal that loves what it loves. That's a Mary Oliver poem quote, and essentially our own power. So evolutionary astrology has, you know, had a place in my heart for all of these years. It really was actually the first spiritual path I found that I felt really allowed me to be a full-on human. Before I found, you know, I understand now different types of spiritual paths that are maybe more embodied or earth-based versus spiritual paths that are more ascension and like heaven-oriented. And because I'm such a Plutonic person, I really loved the pathway that EA taught me when I was younger, that my body, my desires, my human essence is part of my spiritual path, that it's on purpose, that this is the vessel that I'm learning through, and that I can have experiences that my human wants to have, that I don't have to like transcend out of that. And so at the same time, it's like, it's not just like I go for whatever I want and don't, you know, it's like I'm listening to the pulse of truth that lives inside of me and letting that humble me and shape me and carve me over and over again. So it's like this relationality between myself, my human, my soul, my body, the earth, the like people around me, the community, the world, like considering all of those things together, which of course gets complex, but there's something in it that just keeps my, it feels true over and over again. It's not like I ever get over it, basically. So I want to share a little bit for those of you, you know, I'm calling you to the evolutionary astrology intensive to go deeper, to become astrologically literate within this tradition. I'm calling people that are, you know, wanting to learn astrology from a place of maybe being more beginner at it or wanting to learn how to put things together, as well as people that are already advanced in their astrology practice who just want to go deeper in the Pluto school, who want to learn this particular lineage of astrology, or who want to be held in an alchemical container like the evolutionary astrology intensive. So I'm going to share with you for a bit about the class and then get into what symbols of power are. But in the class, we cover the fundamentals. I call these like building blocks, as in the zodiac signs, the planets, their underlying deeper evolutionary intentions, right? So as we've been talking about Pluto, for example, maybe you've been getting a sense of how I talk about the archetypes in a way that is broad and deep. I want my students to have like a really felt emotional resonance with all of the archetypes so that rather than being a memorized learner or a book learner, for example, that you actually just recognize the archetypes like friends, like beings, like you know them, you start to see them in your life. The more you get to know them, the more your life opens to. It's like an enchanted storybook experience where you learn more symbols on the map and then your life gets bigger. And then your life getting bigger helps you learn the map more. And there's like this expansion that happens because of this approach. The fundamentals or the building blocks also include the lunar nodes. You may have heard of your south node and north node and how they relate to like your destiny or your past lives. We get into them a lot deeper in a more nuanced technical way. The houses, planetary aspects, as well as the evolutionary astrology chart analysis method, which resources Pluto and the lunar nodes at the bottom line to tell this narrative about how you relate to desire, what you want the most, how your personality relates to your desires. And you'll find, you know, I've been working with my chart in this particular way for like 10 years now. And it just keeps opening. Like what I thought it meant when I was 21 led, like helped me build my career, like helped me become an astrologer, helped me heal from certain things, helped me develop my gifts, like helped me like own these deeper parts of me, helped me work through the deepest impasses that I have, like the weird, what the fuck, like, why is this happening situations in my life? And with time and experience, my perception of my natal chart changes. And it's really ecstatic internally to me to just like be in that, you know, I love getting to know myself. It's weird. I'm an Aries, but like, I enjoy being a human. Like I enjoy my own experience and I like having this lens. I love offering it to other people too. And the way that it just validates things at such a deep level and really opens something. Then part of the art of this is that we learn to put it all together. We learn these individual parts, but then, you know, and learn how to deeply empathize and feel these archetypes. And then we start to weave them together strategically with technique. And it starts to get more kaleidoscopic. Essentially, a lot of our problems or unfulfilled desires have some connection to our relationship, our relationships, right? Our relationships with the energy and the nature that lives inside of us, our relationships with the energies of these archetypes that are making up our experience. So a lot of times when people are on the periphery of astrology, when they're getting to know it, there's a lot of sign stereotypes or a lot of like Saturn's hard or Pluto's intense or whatever, like these simplistic ideas about the signs and planets that relates to simplistic thinking and smaller experiences. And when the paradigm expands, when we see something deeper about the archetypes that actually opens our consciousness, there's a healing psychologically and emotionally that comes with that, whether we've been judging ourselves, judging life, judging other people with a small, narrow view. When we expand it, it yields these kinds of spiritual and emotional dividends that are really hard to explain, but is why like I love this practice so much, because it has given me so much in my life. It's really hard to even quantify it. By the end of the course, I see my students forming complex syntheses. They're reading charts as a whole. They're like interweaving different signatures and like they're in this cauldron of gnosis that's really beautiful to see. They do that for themselves as well as for charts of other people that they're looking at. And I think this is the last slide about the intensive for now, but there's mentorship. The building block teachings are pre-recorded videos. We meet live to discuss it as a group and practice the concepts. And there's also a forum for questions and discussion between classes. Both of those are really great opportunities to be in discussion and to work your understanding through dialogue. Every student has a lot of opportunities throughout this course to be personally reflected. I offer adjustments to help you like work with the archetypes or offer reflections about what I see in your chart or what I see in your interpretations. And I do that because that relational quality of study is how I learn and it's how I like to teach. And there's some, this class is like really a field, you know, like it's the teachings, but it's also the discussions and the experience that we create together. I've been teaching this course for like 6 years now, and it's really, it keeps getting deeper and refined and whatnot. It's a really amazing experience. And I'm excited to invite you to the one that's beginning again, April 2nd. We'll share more at the end about applying and all of that. And as I've been saying, it's an all levels course. Even if you're advanced, we're served by going back to the so-called basics. These basics are strategically organized to give beginners their bearings, and they're penetratingly mythopoetic and insight-inducing enough to keep the attention of my advanced students. So, let's talk about symbols of power. I think now we're set up to. This is like a concept inspired by something like animal totems, this idea that, you know, I really love this book by Ted Andrews. There's other amazing books about the spirituality of animals. This was one of the first I ever encountered that introduced me to the idea that, you know, I remember asking, like I was in prayer asking a question. And then I went for a drive shortly after that, and a literal tortoise crossed the road in front of me. I had to stop the car and watch the tortoise get to the side of the road. I was like, that's unusual. It's not every day that I see a tortoise cross the road. And I looked up the meaning of tortoise in this book, and it actually really spoke to me about the question that I had just prayed about. So this is something... it happens, you know, astrologically, I relate to the archetypes and the planets in an animistic way. I don't think of them as like not alive or inert or just conceptual. I do think of them as alive and with consciousness. So my practice is a lot of conversation with nature, right? Whether it's nature on Earth, the nature inside of me, or the cosmos, the planets. And so when we tune our attention, a lot of us have been conditioned inside of a really soulless kind of dead worldview where magic happens in the human brain in our imagination, and it's only a projection on the external environment, that the external environment is just, you know, organic and dead matter. It doesn't have any consciousness, etc. And that's simply not true. Like there's so much aliveness and soul all around us, and the environment can talk to us, right? So if it's happening through symbols or omens or whatnot, when I think about symbols of power, this is about reading the unusual, provocative situations that appear in our lives as totemic as well, or as waking dream symbols. That if you're trying to learn about the depth of your soul, your unconscious, right? And your unconscious is where a lot of your creative power lives. Your soul might be talking to you through experiences that come up in your life that really provoke you, that get under your skin, that entice you, that fascinate you, that upset you, that really bring you to some kind of edge. And part of my practice as a Plutonic person, you know, what keeps me sharp as a guide, as a counselor, as a coach, as a teacher, is that I always have to be in my own process and honor my own cutting edge. And I do have these experiences in life that feel like emotional shocks or difficult things happen. And a human part of me is upset about it, you know, complains about it, feels victimized by it. The soul part of me is like, what is this about? What's the lesson? What am I learning? Right. And I think that type of consciousness is actually really sophisticated. It's a cultivated type of consciousness, and people can do it in unhelpful ways, because we have to remember that, like, we also are in a highly Judeo-Christian field with a lot of spiritual concepts around good, bad, sin, evil, heaven, hell. And so there's a lot of confusion that comes up in that, in terms of judging ourselves as bad or other people as bad because of things that are happening. So it's like, it absolves us of responsibility and of shame to think that things are random, right? When things in our life that are challenging or good are random, we're not responsible for it. It doesn't mean anything about us. If we let it mean something about us, there's a shame that comes up around bad things happening, right? So that's like the place where we can get actually more skillful and sophisticated about how we utilize this teaching. And I'm going to be talking about that as we go. But from a Pluto perspective, our subconscious and unconscious draws forth a majority of our life experiences. And when we meet our experiences through this lens, we get to learn about previously hidden and now emerging dimensions of ourselves, right? This is one of the things that keeps me really enchanted by my life, is getting to read it from a symbolic perspective constantly, and being in this like conversation with it, where I'm transforming and I'm letting life actually touch and move me. So part of practicing this alchemical consciousness, we kind of have to divest from a particular collective addiction, which is known as the victim triangle. There's an article by Lynn Forrest. I will maybe link in the chat at the end about the victim triangle. And so these are roles that we actually kind of bounce between. Or we might have one that we tend to be in a lot of the time. It might be like our chosen kind of starting position. They're all archetypes of the victim. So the victim is essentially feeling helpless and powerless, right? Feeling beset by life, overwhelmed, incapable, etc. It's different to, you know, be in a difficult situation and have like a empowered ask for help or like navigate it in some way. But the victim is like this kind of fog or this spell of like, this is happening to me kind of thing. And again, there are situations where people are genuinely victimized. There are situations that it's not appropriate to use this teaching. It's not something to leverage at other people. It's something to start out with just internally. But victimhood can also be a relationship that we have to our own nature, right? Like, I really remember my like hormonal experience of like my, yeah, hormonal experience first coming online as a teenager, and how profoundly difficult it was to hold that, how it felt like, you know, if I'm turned on, but I don't have someone to play it out with, then I feel victimized by having this sensation in my body. I had to learn like later in life that it could actually be pleasurable to just hold that and be in it and not feel victimized by my own body sensations. Then another part of this triangle is the rescuer. So this is the part that tries to save ourselves from our victimization, or save others, right? It's like a playing God, I know better than, saving, kind of martyr-like. So if you've really gone out of your way, like, it's one thing to be thoughtful, considerate, but if you're like getting in people's material and trying to be so good that you never hurt them, or you don't hurt them in the way that they're always hurt by life, and you're like trying to make sure that you rescue them from something, that's part of this victim triangle. I'm gonna think of any other good examples of rescuer. And then persecutor is the one that, you know, takes this energy of feeling victimized and then needs to exact punishment, teach a lesson, perpetrate. If you, you know, some people start out at this one and they're the maybe the ones writing really spicy things on social media, calling people out and causing fires and drama and stuff and bringing the heat. If you think about a time that you really wanted to be mean or hurt someone, you might imagine that you felt really also victimized or hurt, right? And so the persecutor comes out as like a retaliation against that feeling of being victimized. A lot of this is illusion, right? Like one of the examples that Lynn Forrest uses in her article is a doctor who's like playing golf. And one of his clients, patients, comes up to him on the golf course and he's like, how dare this person approach me on my day off? He's like super victimized by the person coming up asking a question about medical stuff. And so the doctor at the next client visit with that patient, he was giving that patient a shot, but he on purpose made it more painful just to get revenge for the person bothering him on his day off at the golf course. So unnecessary, right? Like that doctor could have just taken responsibility for having a boundary of like, I'm not going to talk about this on the golf course, right? But instead he like felt victimized, had to like punish, et cetera. So this happens, we might bounce between these roles relationally. We might kind of bounce between them. It can happen in family dynamics. It happens internally, et cetera. The reason I bring this up is because when something provocative at our cutting edge happens in our life, sometimes we feel powerless by it. Sometimes we want to like get on top of it and like fix it. Or other times we want to like kill it and perpetrate it and be done with it. And these are all like psychological reactions that have a root in victimization. What Lynn Forrest suggests in this article is that the way out of the victim triangle is just taking responsibility, right? When you're clear about your desires, boundaries, and needs, and feel empowered to advocate or act in alignment with those things, we're not as reactive in this particular type of psychology. I was also inspired by Arnold Mundell's book, The Shaman's Body, where he's essentially talking about how we are living in a waking dream and that unusual circumstances that reach our experience, peak experiences, negative or positive, are a dream of the earth, a dream of the cosmos, essentially reaching itself through our own body. And that we can learn through those experiences. So he writes about taking responsibility in the way that it means accepting everything you say, feel, hear, write, see, and communicate as part of you. Accepting your accidents and your lies is an act of compassion. Taking responsibility means that if you are sick, you must understand that the body is bringing up a dream you have not yet known. If you have relationship difficulties, accidents, or world problems, things are happening to you with which you are not in agreement. Taking responsibility means focusing awareness not only upon the events you identify with, but also upon the events you want to disavow. So this is where I think things with Pluto get super tricky, is that, you know, a lot of what brings us to deeper Pluto transformative work is that something is happening in our lives that we really don't like or don't understand, that we're in disagreement with. So why I brought up the victim triangle is that one way to kind of off-gas the energy of those is to just be like, it's someone else's problems. It's the world. It's like other, it's whatever. It's these other forces. Instead of the really alchemical process of looking within at where is this touching part of me at a deep level? Where am I hooked into this story? What is it teaching me? What's the initiation encoded in this challenge? So that type of thinking again, is something that I encourage individuals to choose. I don't encourage leveraging it at people. It's really like a deep personal internal dialogue around, if this is a waking dream symbol, what is this trying to teach me? What am I learning from it? Does this make sense? So evolution and alchemy. How we learn through our most cutting-edge life experiences, how we learn to alchemize difficult events or discover the treasure and riches inside of them, how we shift ongoing reoccurring patterns, that is our evolution knocking at our door, but we haven't figured out how to decipher or decode it yet. Right? So we think of, you know, transformation is really beautiful at the butterfly side of it. It's like magnificent. But going through the swamp, going through the muck, being in the raw material, the lead to gold situation, it's like you have to kind of look at where your life is showing up as lead or the raw material and be able to actually see the arc of possibility within it and also meet what it's asking of you. Can I just mute everyone?
Yeah.
Nice.
Lots of t-shirts.
Did you find it?
So I want to share a personal story of how evolutionary astrology and I found each other, because I did say it was plutonic. And this is a story that I tell in more detail on the second episode of my podcast. I also wrote a lightly fictionalized novel about it called The Garden of Sleeping Hammers. So I'm just going to kind of summarize it essentially. But what happened was that when I was 21, I was beginning to have like the beginning of kind of psychic and extrasensory experiences. And one morning I had a somewhat prophetic dream that led me to meet a man that night who I would soon find out was an ex-CIA agent. He was living in a magical reality all of the time, magical, shamanic, mystical person. And I was absolutely fascinated with him. I had been a writer my whole life, and I was even self-aware as a writer that I hadn't had a lot of life experience. I wrote from fantasy, I wrote from caricature. I was a really, you know, writing is one of my skills and talents in this life, and I wrote these beautiful works of prose that were coming from somewhere. I was channeling it, but it wasn't from like life experience, right? And so I'm 21 and I meet this ex-CIA agent who I'm captivated by. He, you know, I'm spending every day with him. Eventually I fall in love with him, but it felt like life was offering me a really profound experience. Now, it was psychologically provocative to me. My family, they grew up watching crime shows, and those images really haunted me. So having this situation of kind of falling in love with someone that was a very lethal person who had most certainly been a mercenary and whatnot was triggering, right? But also I liked him a lot. And I was having these beyond magical experiences with him. It starts to lead to a spiritual awakening that honestly, I didn't have the wisdom, the intellectual frameworks, the understandings, or really the proper guidance around. So I was spilling out in the form of speaking without filter and also having some miscalculations and, you know, what would be called delusions. But I can see that I just, you know, was having a huge amount of energy run through my body and didn't know how to interpret it. So this led to a certain development of charisma and psychic ability overnight. I was acting totally differently. People that I was meeting were telling me I was going to be famous someday. Like I was charming people. I was suddenly more like not shy and like believing in myself in a way that I never quite had. But I also began to have all these like visions about myself, like my roots. And I started to antagonize my family a bit. I wanted them to see the light. I wanted them to see the experience I was having. I wanted to convince them of certain things that I saw that was in disagreement with how I'd been raised and whatnot. And in those clashes with my family, in my total like wired spiritual awakening kundalini state, my family had no idea what to do with that. They paradigmatically just thought, oh, she's having a manic episode, she's mentally ill. And they were supporting me through college. They took away that support and had me see a psychiatrist. I did not believe ever in the diagnosis that they gave me of being bipolar with psychotic tendencies. I wear that as a little bit of like Lilith pride in some sense. But I had to fake my way out. I learned pretty quickly in this experience that everything that I said was now being looked at through that filter. I couldn't talk about animal totems or spiritual experiences or my visions without it being evidence that I was psychotic. So keep in mind too, I'd been hanging out with this spy and he told me all these stories of like deep cover spy operations. And so I just decided to take the medicine that life was offering me and be like, okay, I'll be a spy. I'm going to say exactly what I need to say to the psychiatrist and to my family, pretend I'm with the program and get out. If you might imagine, like it was at that point, the worst experience I'd ever had in my life. It was devastating. It was terrifying. I was afraid that I would never make my way out of it, that I would never have a good life, that I was going to be stigmatized in some way, that I would never make a name for myself in the world, be seen for my gifts, that I would just be kind of done for. And in that despair, I had reached out to an evolutionary astrologer, received profound counsel. And by the time I was able to fake my way out of this experience and say all the things and go back to college and get my life back together, evolutionary astrology and studying it helped me heal, understand, integrate, see where I had created that experience, see where that experience was part of a deep story that I've been living out, see the gifts in it, heal from it, heal any ruptures that happened with my family, and also really start to work with the wisdom teachings of evolutionary astrology to build an actual life for myself where I could be a magical person in public talking about, you know, kind of bizarre things and actually be paid for it, actually be considered a intelligent, coherent person for it, instead of receiving a label that there was something wrong with me. I really feel like I came a long way in that. And the way that I managed to not get stuck in the web that was being placed to me. So when I think about symbols of power, it's like the spy, meeting a spy was a symbol of power, but also encountering a psychiatrist was a symbol of power. I met that psychiatrist unwillingly. For me, it felt like I was going to prison for breaking the rules of reality. And I met with this figure that it was a really profound power dynamic. And I stumbled into it. And I learned from it how to believe myself when no one believed me, which was ultimately so not allowed, right? Because I was being told that my inner experience was delusional, that it was all a pipe dream, that I just needed to take drugs and that I just needed to be better. And I said no to all of that. What that gifted me, you know, why I don't feel victimized by that particular trauma is because it's been alchemized. It's not an active trauma for me. And because after that, there was a way that I wasn't so vulnerable around what people thought of me. There was a way that I learned how to sit in the power of being a magical person, of being a person with extrasensory perception, of being a person who sees things or relates to the world in an unusual way. And if people don't want to believe me, fine, you know, but like, I'm not going to try to convince them anymore. And I'm going to share my ideas with the world and magnetize the people that do want to be in connection with what I have to offer. And so it built a type of confidence inside of me that is really deep, because it touched me in a place that was so, so like my life felt like it was on the line. So I call those kinds of experiences symbols of power. And honestly, it took me, I spent maybe 2 years processing that event pretty intensely to not resent my family, to understand where they were coming from, to forgive, like see these deeper parts of myself. And I processed it. And I think that's really the power of Pluto, or symbols of experience or symbols of power, is that when you can process it all the way, it reveals the gift form. And these things are difficult to process because they are the edge of our experience. That's how we're learning and growing in life. So I want to share, we're going a little bit. We have, I said this was 90 minutes and we'll see. We might go over. Because we might go over, actually, I just want to share something for those of you that are live on the call, and then we'll go back to the teachings. Just want to let you know that the Evolutionary Astrology Intensive begins April 2nd and that the application deadline is March 29th. You can see those dates are close together because I know people come in last minute, but if you're feeling called, feel free to apply earlier, because then you can get rooted and kind of settled in before we start. For those of you on this call, apply by March 8th and enroll by March 22nd for a private reading and coaching session added. So that's one reading plus coaching session. And that's for those of you that are able to pay in full and apply by March 8th and enroll by March 22nd. By paying in full, I mean that can be payment plan, but just paying that rate. Whereas I do also have scholarship, tuition assistance. Please apply by March 15th for that. The course is $2,200. And I also have tuition assistant rates. So yeah, that is, if you just mention in your application that you were on the Symbols of Power call, you'll be eligible for that reading and coaching session. So there's four ways that Jeffrey Wolf Green, he talks about this in his book, Pluto Volume 1, four ways that Pluto shows up in our lives to affect evolution. And so just so it's clear, the symbol of power is the intense, provocative life experience that is clearly a waking life dream symbol that could be calling you into your power in some way. It's not necessarily a situation that shows up as a walk in the park or as something easy. You know, and another example could be like, a lot of people have had really traumatic experiences with being on stage, right? Like stage fright, or being like, even like booed off the stage or heckled or something like that. So imagine if you have this like really deep desire to share your voice or share your creativity, and you got this message early on that like, that was wrong or bad. And so then that part got discouraged in such a deep way that when I hear those kinds of stories from people where it's like, they still actively have stage fright, to me, it's like, well, there's something really powerful inside of you that actually wanted to express, and it feels like it got blocked. And so reclaiming being on stage, or like letting people hear you sing, or whatever a person needs to do to get to that level again, that could be the symbol of power, right? Like, it's where a life situation symbolizes that something is loaded for us. When something has that much charge or that much intensity, it's like our whole soul magnet is vibrating with that. And when we learn how to be in relationship to that, wherever that wants to lead us or whatever that wants to teach and show us, that's integrating Pluto or the symbol of power. So these four ways that Jeffrey Wolf Green talks about are the following. One is producing emotional shocks. And this is in which some behavioral pattern or life situation is forcefully removed from our lives. Definitely know this one, right? But it's this sense of the shocking event where, you know, it's a wake-up call. It's like a bucket of cold water on the face kind of energy, but it hits a really deep chord. Like it's something that often has people go into some healing process, go to therapy, go to coaching. Or if you experience it more often in a micro way, you learn how to roll with them in a certain way. You learn how to be affected and moved by them, as opposed to, you know, the reason I showed the victim triangle is that there are some people who are always kind of singing a song about how everything bad happens to them. Everyone's always fucking them over. And it's just like always this like flippant, it's just something out there. It has nothing to do with me. And the emotional shock part of it is like receiving the jolt of these difficult experiences and seeing where it was actually activating something inside of us that was kind of complicit or part of those events. It can also create a situation in which we form a relationship to something we perceive we need. Like me and the ex-CIA agent, right? Like I was well aware at the time that going down the magical rabbit hole with this like very unreliable narrator character was not like the most responsible life decision, but it felt like the best possible story I could have lived at the time. I felt like I couldn't resist. That being said, I've become a lot more skilled in how I go about relationships as time has gone on, and I don't just jump off the deep end. But that was something that really called me as like, this is important, right? So this happens where we meet people, we experience teachings, codes, opportunities that were like, yeah, I need to bond with this. I need to merge with it. And then through the relationship that we form with the idea, the person, the experience, we gradually and meaningfully evolve based on that relationship that we formed. It can also produce or create situations in our lives in which we become aware of some external or internal source of stagnation or limitation blocking further growth, right? So it's just those moments where you realize like I'm super stuck, or if I stay in this relationship or stay at this job, like my life's going to be the same every day for the rest of my life. Like that awareness of nothing's changing here. Like I need to change something. I need to change how I'm participating. I need to change how I'm relating. I need to change environments, what have you, to start to, you know, one of these examples could be someone that has maybe like lived in their hometown. And they're getting that call of like, I need to travel. I need to go somewhere farther away. I need perspective. Because if I'm in the same place I was born and I'm around the same people that I've known my whole life, there's only so much here. I need to break out of this, right? And it could even be the flip of someone that is always running, always traveling, and they're like, I actually need to be rooted and stable. I need something different. So it's not the thing itself that's inherently the right choice. It's how it relates to our own evolution, like what's true for us. I just wanted to really name that. I think these dragon images are really cute, by the way. Just had to include them. And then the fourth is producing or creating a situation in which we become aware of a new capacity or capability that has been latent or dormant. This process is triggered at various points in our lives through external or internal conditions that give birth to some new impulse, idea, thought, or desire. The process of actualizing or developing the new capacity creates an evolutionary or growth effect. This is one I love. You know, it's when you meet people that are influential to you, because they have a quality, they have something about them that shows you that you also have that in yourself. This can be more negatively experienced as envy or jealousy, but it can also be experiences like inspiration. And for me, I think like the spy figure was so powerful in a lot of ways. In one way, it was just that he lived in a magical reality all of the time. He wasn't living in the same reality frame as everyone else. And he didn't doubt the mystery. He didn't dabble in magic. He was magical. And he was the first person I met who was like that. And I found that I'm actually that way. I have a capacity, especially through that experience of being psychiatrized, I have a capacity to navigate normal life and be like a citizen and a contributing member of society. But I live in a magical reality all of the time. I'm integrated with like grounded daily life, but I'm in the enchanted field. Right. And so for me, meeting a person that was like that was this permission that I could be that way too. I started a podcast after listening to other podcasts and loving it and being like, wait, I could start one. Right. So just noticing when your desire or fascination is triggered, this is taking responsibility for, hey, that thing lives inside of me. The victim triangle version of it would be like, I don't have it. And I feel so victimized by having to see this person shine. And I'm going to like be mean to them or like heckle them in some way and persecute them. Or I'm going to like, you know, just getting all messed up about having these feelings towards someone or having these feelings about someone's brightness versus taking responsibility for, ooh, like this person's magnetism or this person's gifts really show me a part of myself that I haven't paid attention to in a long time or maybe ever, and I want to cultivate it. Right? That kind of difference. So again, noticing and interpreting symbols of power in our lives is a matter of exiting the victim triangle and reflecting on how the situation at hand is offering a reflection to our subconscious and offering raw materials for a journey of alchemy to unfold. Only use this teaching for yourself where it is appropriate. Do not punish yourself with it, right? Sometimes if something really shocking happened or something that feels really victimizing, you can have some time to be a human about it. This teaching is just for when you want to uncover what it meant or how to work with the experience and how to transform it, but do not use it to self-persecute. Do not use it to persecute others, right? This is a really, taking responsibility for our unconscious is a journey. And kindness and compassion and like self-love goes a long way in it. So we're approaching the end of this talk. I wanted to end with this image of treasure, conceivably in a cave or below the ground somewhere, right? And this image of a root system and how so much of what's happening below the surface that we're getting, you know, it's there and it gets triggered or activated by symbols of power, by provocative dream, like waking dream experiences that rumble you to the core in some way, and show you that there's actually some potency there. It may take a moment to unravel or interpret it, but something got activated. And when we form a relationship to these deeper experiences that rattle us a little bit, there's a lot of gold inside of that alchemical process. It's one thing to live at the surface or above the surface or be like, oh, I just think positive, you know, like all that up here. But like when you really get intimate with like the nature that lives inside of you and how much it churns within, that's where the riches of Pluto live. It is the god of the underworld, and the name Pluto means riches. Right. And we can definitely sleep on this by wanting to live on the surface or not wanting to take responsibility for our inner life. Or we can take the dive and do the alchemy. And so a primary way that I love to share Pluto in a deeper way with people, whether you're wanting to learn astrology from like a really structured way and like start to get it, start to have it as a language, maybe it's something you haven't felt like is really yours or really clicks yet. This is a class to offer you that personal relationship to an astrology practice, something that you can like really emotionally resonate with. Or if you're more advanced in your practice, you are also welcome into this alchemical container to get to know this lineage of astrology better. Like if you're just feeling called to get to know Pluto or to advance in your practice by working with a teacher again, it's an all levels course. It just works that way. And I find that the range of experiences in the course community creates a lot of richness for everyone. So I really love welcoming people of all levels. Again, for those of you on this call, you can apply by March 8th, enroll by March 22nd for a private reading and coaching session added. I'm going to put that link in the notes, but also you can just find it. I link it everywhere. I'll email it to you in the replay, the application and the course page. The course page has information about the logistics and student testimonials and all of that. So I'll link all of those. So just reading the chat. Oh, thank you, everyone. Okay, now that we are at the end here, feel free to just say something in the chat. Feel free to contact me, send me an email. And I'm actually just going to grab, the link for you all on the call, but I'm going to stop the recording here. So those of you watching the recording, thank you as well. I hope that this teaching about Pluto is restorative, regenerative, inspiring in some way. This practice has been so enriching for me over the years, and it's been sustainable for me to keep being in and to keep moving with because of how much it moves with my life and because of how much it gives to my life over and over again. So thank you so much for joining me.